The harpoon swarm sheared down through the atmosphere, hypervelocity friction ablating away the composite's outer layer of molecules to leave a dazzling ionic tail over 100 kilometers long. From below, it resembled a rain of fierce liquid light. Their silence was terrifying. A display of such potency should sound like the roar of an angry god. Murphy clung to one of the rails along the side of the wheelhouse, squinting through squeezed-up eyelids as the solid sheet of vivid destruction plummeted towards him. He heard Jacqueline Couture moaning in fear and felt a cheap, malicious satisfaction. It was the first time she had shown the slightest emotion. Impact could only be seconds away now. The harpoons were directly overhead, an atmospheric river of solar brilliance mirroring the Zamjan's course. They split down the center, two solid planes of light diverging with immaculate symmetry, sliding down to touch the jungle away in the west, then racing past the Issachor at a speed too fast, even for enhanced human senses to follow. None of them, not one, landed in the water. Multiple explosions obliterated the jungle. Along both sides of the Zamjan, gouts of searing purple flame streaked upwards as the harpoons struck the earth, releasing their colossal kinetic energy in a single devastating burst of heat. The swath of devastation extended for a length of 7 kilometers along the banks, reaching 1.5 kilometers inland. A thick, filthy cloud of loam and stone and wood splinters belched up high into the air, blotting out the heat flashes. The blast wave rolled out in both directions, flattening still more of the jungle. Then the sound broke over the boat. The roar of the explosions overlapped, merging into a single sonic battering ram, which made every plank on the Issachor twang as if it was an overtuned guitar string. After that came the eternal thunderclap of the air, being ripped apart by the harpoon's plunge, sound waves finally catching up with the weapons. Murphy jammed his hands across his stinging eardrums. His whole skeleton was shaking, joints resonating painfully. Debris started to patter down, puckering the already distressed surface of the river. A sprinkling of fires burnt along the banks where shattered trees lay strewn among deep craters. Pulverized loam and wood hung in the air, an obscure black fog above the mortally wounded land. Murphy slowly lowered his hands, staring at the awful vision of destruction. "It was our side," he said in dazed wonder. "We did it." Garrett Tucci was at his side, jabbering away wildly. Murphy couldn't hear a thing. His ears were still ringing vociferously. "Shout! Datavise! My ears are packed up!" Garrett blinked. He held up his communications block. "It's working!" he yelled. Murphy datavised his own block, which reported the channel to the Elint satellite was open. A beam of bright white light slid over the Issachor, originating from somewhere above. Murphy watched as the beam swung out over the water, then tracked back towards the boat. He looked up, beyond surprise. It was coming from a small aircraft, hovering 200 meters overhead, outlined by the silver stars. Green, red, and white strobes flashed on the tips of its wings and canards. His neuromnemonics identified the jet-black platform, a BK-133. Murphy's communication block bleeped to acknowledge a local channel opening. "Murphy? Are you there, Murphy?"
"Sir, is that you?" he asked incredulously.
"Expecting someone else," Kelvin Solanke datavised. The beam found the Issachor again and remained trained on the deck. "Have you still got your prisoner?"
"Yes, sir."
Murphy glanced at Jacqueline Couture, who was staring up at the aircraft, shielding her eyes against the spotlight. "Good man. We'll take her back with us."
"Sir, Niels Rekker is injured pretty badly. I don't think he can climb a rope ladder."
"No problem." The BK-133 was descending carefully, wings rocking in the thermal microbe bursts generated by the harpoon's impact. Murphy could feel the compressor jets gusting against his face, a hot, dry wind, pleasant after the river's humidity. He saw a wide hatch was open on the side of the fuselage. A man in naval fatigues was slowly winching down towards the Issachor. Floodlights on the roof of the Navy office showed the grounds around the building were thick with people. All of them seemed to be looking up into the night sky.